Okay.
All right, sweetie, you ready? All right. Yes. Reporting live from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Oh my goodness. Cable actuated and opinionated.
This is Alt Bike Now. Alternative radio.
For alternative cyclists.
I'm Ronnie Romance.
And I'm Aria Ready.
Because you're
never ready.
But we're ready right now, folks, as we are recording, and this is episode 4 of our podcast.
Month one,
yeah, complete month. Thank you for joining us.
Insane. We stay consistent.
Yes, in some parts of our lives, we do stay consistent here. So, you know, I think I want to start this one off with thank you to, we have a support from a...
support from a supporter.
shout out
Garrett Hall.
We are getting $3 a month from Garrett Hall. So feeling rich right now.
So yeah. Thank you so much, Garrett.
I was saying that went to an extra squirt of maple syrup in my oats this morning. So thank you, Garrett.
Maple syrup ain't cheap. It doesn't come from trees, you know. Maple syrup doesn't grow on trees. Let's move on, folks. Mm-hmm. We're ready. Nice. Happy Memorial Day, Jenny.
Happy Memorial Day, yes. It's nice to be here. Like the official kickoff to summer for many of you. It's probably a beautiful weekend, hopefully. And hopefully you've been able to get out on. Memorial Day is celebrated here in the U.S. and the U.K.
Oh.
So hopefully, I mean, we're getting some pretty UK conditions here in Nutmeg Country right now. It's been raining for 3 days straight.
Cold, rainy.
You know, not very inspiring. Yeah, we both have blankets on our laps. Well, you took the blanket. I just have a shirt on my lap.
Why not put on pants? Blanket.
So, you know, it's been trying to get out on some bike rides. We'll get into that with our real life report back, though. But, you know, we've got some quick news to get through, some pro cycling news, and then some like bike industry news, more on the alt side. We also have some
real life report backs.
Real life report backs that are going to be pretty good. We've got.
Tell them why you're mad.
A great tell them why you're mad. I've been waiting to do this one for a little while.
Oh, boy.
Because, yeah, that's how mad I am.
Oh, and boy.
You can hear it in my voice. I'm like shaking.
Gird
I'm
your
like
loins.
Shaking right now. And then I guess towards the end there, we're going to get into...
podcasts we've been listening to. Classic
stuff. What I was saying inserted in there was going to be like a cool thing that Aria had done years ago that we're going to get back into now. With a little update. Is that real life report back like 5 years later?
I don't know if it's an update. I don't have any updates.
There's no
updates. It's just story time. It's just story time with Aria Charan. Let's get into the headlines.
Okay, straight into the headlines here. As everybody knows, the Giro d'Italia, the Tour of Italy, is in full swing right now. We're kind of like right in the center of it, of a 21-22 stage grand tour, the first of the season for the men.
Yeah.
As many have expected, Jonas Vingegaard, who's the Dane, who has won the Tour de France and also won the Vuelta before, and he could win seemingly just about any grand tour that Tadej Pogacar is not present at. He was heavily favored to win this year's Giro, and he's finally kind of stamped his mark on the race after being sick, they say, for like the few days beforehand. So his time trial efforts weren't quite up to par with what you would ordinarily see with him, and we were all kind of like, maybe Jonas is faltering a little bit, but no.
I don't know if you noticed this before. He was like, I'm getting serious with this stage about his facial hair.
Oh, yeah. He's got facial hair now. So, Jonas.
Did he always have that? Anyway, he has facial hair. And to me, he kind of looks like the evil version of Jonas.
He's more of a bad
boy. When he's ready to take. He's still kissing his handlebar. He's still kissing his ring.
He kisses a photo of his family on his handlebar when he crosses the line each time. And I'm waiting
for
him.
One of these days, Ronnie's like, he's going to crash.
He's going to crash doing that.
But Jonas is a bad boy right now. Yeah. He's got facial hair. He looks like a bizarro version of himself. But I have to correct you, Ron. He did beat Tadej fair and square in Tour de France 2023.
Yeah.
So,
but has had a lot of trouble since, a lot of injuries, and he's a meek character. He's not dominant. He's not a dom.
Tell that
means.
To his thighs.
Yeah, he's got big
tell
thighs.
Tell that to his thigh legs.
Anyway, you know, we don't, again, we're trying not to dwell too much on pro cycling news because we suck at it and there are better options out there, as we said last week. But Jonas won big climbing stage over the weekend on Saturday, and we made barbecue tempeh sandwiches and chocolate chip cookies.
Ron made those things and I ate them. They were very good.
We had a real nice Saturday just getting all this stuff together.
Those chocolate chip cookies were baller. They like melted in your mouth.
I make them with chickpea flour and acorn flour, folks.
It was so good.
Low on sugar. But
just delicious, warm
coconut oil. Coconut oil for the fat. I mean, that's the key, folks. Any recipe that asks for butter, I mean, you could use butter, but I mean, coconut oil is the same damn thing.
Yeah,
it works great.
And if you're eating a cookie that's that good, you know, forget about it. So anyway, I wanted to say that I got into the Giro this time because remember that time trial where they were doing it in that town Massa with the Carrera marble mines in the back? Mm-hmm. And Ronnie and I toured that on our bicycles, like when we were
in another lifetime.
In another lifetime, Ronnie and I just lived off of our bicycles for like 2 years. We were touring. I started this thing called Bike Tour for Tibet, where I was talking about climate change on the roof of the world and all the dams that China was. Anyway, but I remember this day clearly riding into Massa. We were by the beach. Someone was coming up to us and asked if we wanted to buy his bracelets. I was like, no, we're just trying to chill. And then we climbed up out of town, up into those Carrera marble mines. And I remember that day so clearly. And it was just really cool seeing the pros just going like light speeds.
That was a stage.
It was so
cool. That was
cool.
A stage earlier in the week that was raining the entire time. So unfortunately, it was like in the, but I remember climbing up that being like, this is the most expensive mountain we've ever climbed. Carrera marble, baby.
It's all marble. Yeah, but it was really cool seeing like the helicopter shots of that town and just like remembering those.
Right. Yeah, one of the many reasons why we watched the Giro.
Yeah.
So this particular stage that we are referring to, where Jonas stamped his mark on this year's Giro on Saturday, get this, folks, 83 miles, reasonable, right? 14,000 feet of climbing.
Is this now, really miles? And
I got this right. I got this off of Sepkus's Strava.
Oy vey. Say it again.
83 miles, 14,000 feet of climbing. I think it's easy in these grand tours for me as an American, a proud American. Okay. It is hard.
Put it away.
It is real hard for me to work the meters. Kilometers and miles thing. Enough. Like kilometers and meters mean nothing to me. Grams mean something to me.
Because of your baking.
Because that's how bike things are weighed.
Okay.
But overall weight of a bicycle, pounds.
Yeah.
Which LBS. So individual parts, grams, overall weight of a bicycle, pounds. Isn't that funny, folks? That's how we do it, though.
Yeah.
That's how we do it in the bike world.
Mm. Thing that always gets me with conversions is the Fahrenheit to Celsius.
That one's bizarre.
Like, I never
What are know. They doing there? Or what are we doing? Vice versa. You know, we come from different worlds.
And then you're going to throw Kelvins in there for something. What's a Kelvin? What's a joule? I don't know.
Yeah. Where were we?
We just went on a...
Okay, 83 miles, 14,000 feet of climbing. I find it very helpful to look at the pros Stravas to kind of compare my own efforts, or whatever you want to call that, or my own rides to their rides. Now, get this. Would you believe that they did that ride in 4 hours? So that was like over three mountain passes. I think I said afterwards, I was like, 4 hours, we wouldn't even be over the first mountain pass. So pretty wild.
Yeah.
Jonas won that stage. He's fine. He's probably going to win the Giro. Kind of boring, but that's how it goes. There's no one else to contest him. I know Felix Gall was like kind of like the breakout performance he was having, kind of hanging with Jonas on this climb. Well, he was barely hanging on there. It looked, his face to me was that of a person who wanted to die.
But he was really spirited. Like he never gave
spirited death. He was not. He didn't look like he wanted to
give up.
He didn't want to give up, but he didn't want to pedal anymore
himself.
Either. Let me tell you.
Yeah, there are some squares that he was
so,
pedaling
but trying,
at times.
Trying, which is cool. And I think did I touch on this last week? He's on the decathlon team, which is Paul Sexass's team, who is the 19-year-old that we that
Ron
we
often
unintentionally
and he
sexualize
just has,
every week.
Says 19-year-old like yeah. some freaking perv.
Oh, you know he. So that is his team. So is the decathlon team is working well for Felix. So there's hope that Paul has team support in the tour with decathlon, that they've had practice here during the Giro.
Okay,
so we're gonna move on. That's our pro cycling stuff. I haven't really been following the women this week. They have some smaller tours and whatever, but mm-hmm. we'll get back into that next week. We'll move on because I know this is alt cycling now. And
now.
We are, and it is right now.
It is. and now. But before we move on from the Giro stuff, there's some funny things that happened that was great. Like that Tim Rex's performance on that stage that you were just talking about, like his face just in utter agony.
Oh, that's right. That
viral.
Was Tim. That was Tim Rex.
And
he was
Victor
pulling
out
the front.
Was right behind him, like emptying his bidon
yeah.
on his back, like you know, to cool him down, like early.
To cool him down or to warm him.
touch
him. Might as well just get out and say this. This was another news headline. The Giro had fined some riders for peeing in the bidons. Water bottles for you Englishmen, I guess, or maybe just U.S. people call them water bottles.
Biden. Peed in their Bidens.
They peed all over Biden. Okay, so there's people peeing in their Bidens. People peeing on Biden out there. Guy
peeing
can't catch,
in Biden.
Peeing, guy can't catch a break. This guy can't catch a break. And so the race organizers were like, "Who's peeing in the water bottles?" And as it turns out, as the reporting goes, all of the racers unanimously pointed at one character, that of Victor Campenaerts,
who was seen emptying a bidon into the back of a one T Rex.
That is not, we don't have an official word on that, but. It can happen. Speaking from somebody who routinely pees on Joe Biden.
I pee in water bottles all
the
time.
The water bottle is, I mean, especially if you're like a touring camping cyclist and you don't want to get out of your sleeping bag in the morning,
God,
I
yeah.
always would sleep with my water bottle directly next to my camp setup, because then you don't have to get up in the morning or in the middle of the night, God forbid, when it's like 30 degrees or less out. I mean, even 50 degrees, it's kind of cold to get out of your sleeping bag and take a piss. And who knows, are you just going to pee all over your shoes in the middle of the night too, you know? So
yeah.
Sleep with your water bottle next to your camp setup. And whenever you feel that urge, just kind of reach over, pee inside the bottle.
Get out your pee style.
You have to get out
Stick
the pee
it
style.
In.
You could do a pee style into the bottle inside your sleeping bag.
I probably could, yeah.
You probably could or you have.
I have. But I need to do an awkward scooch because I don't want to get out of my sleeping bag, of course.
Uh-huh.
So I'd like get the zipper out slightly, reach my arm, and then I have to stand up and kind of like get on my knees.
Oh, you have to get on your knees.
Yeah.
Okay. Whereas I could just flop the old
Yeah, people with penises is easier to do. But if you don't have a penis, there is the pee style, and you should practice before you take it out into a sleeping bag situation. I have had many years of practice. I've been using the pee style since 2009.
Yeah, OG pee style right here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you got pee style from miles or kilometers, whatever that is.
Or kilojoules.
Kilojoules. Kelvins.
Kilokelvins.
So the news is that Victor Campenaerts
is just a funny thing
because
it
has
like
been pretty popular.
Jokes, and this
we
is
do.
PP.
We do. Who's peeing in the bittens?
And then another PP boo boo joke is that there's some guy named Tim Tootenberg.
I was still talking about Victor and the pee.
Okay.
Because I mean, he was kind of proud of it, as anybody would be. And it's kind of like the whole thing, like we talked about this, I think in episode one, when you said Sarah Stern was peeing her bibs. Uh-huh. And of course I pee my bibs. I'll pee all over the place. I'm basically always peeing because I have urethral strictures. It's a medical condition I can get into later. I've had three surgeries already on it since I was 17. I think I had my first surgery. So I've been peeing all over myself since I was 17 years old, basically, folks. So
yeah, we've been doing it way before.
Way longer, when it was way before it was cool for people to pee on
themselves.
Yeah,
we were doing it before it was cool.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're riding in a professional cycling, you got to like kind of like scooch your wiener outside your bibs.
All right, let's move on.
Yeah, no, I'm doing it. And then you pee on the side of you pee while you're riding or something. But, you know, you're going through these city centers. You don't want to be like peeing on other riders. You can't like stop and pee and then the cop sees you and then, you know, public urination is illegal. And so peeing inside the water bottle is kind of like a stealth way of doing it. And so the argument is like, why are you going to fine this guy for peeing in water bottles? But again, the Italians, I guess, really love, you'll see them on the sides of the road. They'll have like a basketball hoop with like, throw your beet on.
But that's like a classic.
Yeah, it's a classic thing. But no, I guess the Italians are really into it. And I have noticed more of that. And so, you know, it's the fear is that, you know, you pee in a bottle and you get it mixed up with whatever and you throw it and then somebody gets a rude.
Is that really it?
Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah, you get a rude okay. surprise when you open up that prized water bottle that you just received.
Yeah.
And there's something else inside
and
of it.
And it's filled
How could you
drug
have known?
Test samplings. Yeah. Which will light up, I'm sure.
True. But, you know, it could just look like an electrolyte drink. So, I don't know. You know, there's a shout out to Eric True Marmalade, the cargo bike guy, Omnium cargo bike guy, who just travels all over the country, shows up at certain bike events, and he rides his cargo bike on like interstate highways. And oftentimes he has a thing, is a pee, where he sees a bottle and he'll kind of video the whole thing and he'll be like, he'll pick up the bottle and be like, is it pee? And then he cracks the top and he takes a sip. It's very entertaining. Eric, for how strange what he does is a very like down to earth, like connected person. Like you're just like, wow, I expect you to be a complete crazy person, but you're so normal. But yeah,
some might say that about you.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. So good guy. Shout out, Eric. True Marmalade on Instagram and Strava. The Strava is the most impressive because, yeah, he's just
riding. We are not
that cargo
sponsored
bike.
By Strava or anyone.
Not yet, Strava.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Name your price, Strava. Okay. Well, what
do you want to talk about? The enhanced games.
So, more happened? News here. The enhanced games. Anybody, you want to briefly describe to our listeners what the enhanced games are?
Yeah, it seems like an evil like like one night event competition.
In Vegas,
obviously, you know, like where evil can go to make money for the night.
And good. I mean, Pawn Stars, what a great show that was.
Oh, and the area around Vegas. No shade to Vegas at all. But I'm just saying it seems to be a thing. It seems to be an attractor of evil sometimes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the Enhanced Games is this one-night competition where all of these athletes, these are like world-class former Olympian athletes who are being really open and transparent about their enhanced substances that they're using. It's mostly like testosterone. 91% of the athletes competing use testosterone. 79% used human growth hormone, and 62% of the competitors use stimulants such as Adderall. So they're just being out in the open about it. And the prize monies for these are also significant. Like each individual event has a total purse of $500,000 to $250,000, which is quite a bit because you don't get that for, I mean, $500,000, I think, is what the winner of the Tour de France gets. And that's like an insane.
Of course, that doesn't count the
21.
The sponsorships for like from the gear.
For sure, but
yeah, that
still,
is not a lot for
it's
what you,
one
what
night
you're doing
event
there. Yeah.
Where you are just like I just feel like these like evil billionaires are like in some box office just just being like, yes, go ahead. Like make your heart explode.
What do they call it? The poly betting? What is it? What the polymark? With the
polymarkets, yeah.
It's kind of
I'm
like
sure
kind of like go, it goes hand in hand
again,
with the,
evil.
Those market the betting
and evil so, yeah, shit.
But I mean, at the same time, it is kind of like you know there the whole question of fairness in sport has been blown wide open for this.
I'm sorry,
its entirety. I mean, you never know.
Venture capital firms.
You don't think that that's involved
Donald
in the actual
Trump Jr.
Olympics?
And tech billionaire Peter Thiel are backing an event.
Those are names that we don't necessarily. Yeah, we don't.
Yeah, those are unsavory names for unsavory events like this, where there are literally making.
I like that idea of the enhancement though, because it is like the old question of if you're not cheating, are you trying hard enough?
Okay, clavicula, go break your jaw.
In professional sports. You know, in professional sports, you know, the cheating is always there. It's always there. It's just a matter of how well you hide it. And so, you know, there is certainly some appeal. And that's why these games do have such a big purse, I think, is because it is, I don't know, you know, and that's also why WADA, the Anti-Doping Association, is like so up in arms about it, because they see a big, I think people are being hyperbolic about it because it does threaten the current model of quote unquote fair sport, which doesn't exist. And so it's intriguing to me. I don't agree with it. I don't know how else they're going to start, but it is an interesting start, and who knows what it's going to turn into. But the prize money is there, and that is what draws people. And in cycling, I don't know if it'll ever be a part of – there'll ever be like a cycling aspect to this. I doubt it.
Because now it's just track swimming and weightlifting.
Yeah, and no one cares enough about cycling, I don't think, to actually – give them any money, extra money to do this sort of thing. It would be like
how
really
would they even, it can't be like a clean one night event bill.
I guess they could do track. They could do track cycling, but
they could.
That was the most popular spectator sport in America 100 years ago. But
Madison Square Garden originally.
Madison Square Garden was built for Madison Square Garden in New York City was built for a wooden track.
Yep. And who raced on it? The greatest of all time.
Well, we say that every
track
single episode.
Cyclist.
Major Taylor.
Because of them, we can.
So, interesting. So
I just liked this story because it brought up so many like different ethical and like consensual dimensions to how we engage in sports. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, like someone who did really well in the Giro stage, Toon Aerts, he came in second, was also busted for juicing and couldn't compete for 2 years, mm-hmm. but now is doing really well again. So like, you know, there are these doubts in our heads that are like come from, well, are they, that makes us question, you know, the champions or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like I was in middle school when the baseball athletes were being busted for like breaking home run records, and it just kind of kills your heroes, you know, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. so there's that element of it. There's like the, what Ron just brought up, like, oh yeah, everybody's juicing. It's just how well do you perform? But then there's also like this evil tech billionaire stuff happening where they're kind of using
transhumans.
They want to use human guinea pigs for their like longevity plans.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
this really does feel like human guinea pigging to me, which is wild, because you dangle this carrot of this prize money and they were offering an extra $1 million to someone who broke like the 100 meter in running and I think like the 50 km.
To those points,
so
not
it's,
only one of the records was broken.
The 50, well, of the two, the 50 meter freestyle was broken swimming by a guy named Galok Meath by 0.7 seconds. So that does mean that, I mean, that indicates that there is, you know, enhancements that are kind of hidden.
Well, yeah, I think that kind of blows the whole thing open, that even these enhanced
athletes. But these are athletes over 40. Most of them are over 40. Okay, so you can't really make that argument, I don't think.
So
that all
athletes over 40 are competing at the same level as
But they're enhanced.
As people half their age.
Yeah. They're taking health risks, but
But you know, they're 40. They can make those decisions, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess it's not too predatory. It is and it isn't. But you know, it would be interesting if this could roll over into cycling in some way or another. But honestly, I think that cycling has had such a big hit from the Lance era, you know, of it being
like anti-doping. Yeah,
cycling was
crusades,
was seemingly almost was mainstream, was definitely mainstream. Lance Armstrong brought it there. And that was a big boom for the industry in the late 90s, early 2000s.
And you know, postal service kits.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was everywhere. The Livestrong bracelets. And this was all because of a guy who won the Tour de France, you know.
Again, like a hero who was longer a hero anymore.
Because... And, you know, he was, say what you will about Lance, he was competing with everyone else who was doping. So, you know, it could be a level playing field that way. It was just argued that some people respond better to the dope than others, just like how right now the current riders are racing so fast and breaking all of the doping era records because their bikes are more aerodynamic. They are more aerodynamic. There's a better understanding of it, of aerodynamics and nutrition. And so they're having these 100, 150 grams of carbohydrates per hour, which is something in the Lance era was unheard of. They were still eating the horse meat wrapped in cheese or cheese wrapped in horse meat, vice versa. So, you know, there's today's athletes are responding to how well they process carbohydrates. Whereas in Lance era, the athletes were responding to how well they processed the myriad of unnatural substances they are pumping into their extra blood bags or however you want to look at it.
Yikes.
When you get into that, it's kind of queasy.
Yeah. What I'd like to see is an unenhanced cycling where they're like smoking cigarettes and have baguettes out of the bags.
Cigarettes were an enhancement.
Let's go back to that.
Enhancements. That was the thing. The cigarettes were thought to have opened up your lungs, so they would smoke them before the climbs.
Well, that's more
and then
true.
You had nicotine. Which is, you get the Zin bros, like a lot of the randoneering people are zinning. They're zinning. We know a few among us who do that. It just kind of keeps them
like buzzed up or something
so they could finish the ride, do these long rides and stay attentive. Because oftentimes randoneering goes, you know, you're riding like the entire day.
Oh, true. Like it's more dangerous to kind of not
you need these stimulants.
You're just, yeah.
And that is how the early Tour de France was, you know, they were riding these stages
like,
lasted all
like
day.
That, I guess.
And they were on amphetamines. They were on, a bunch of stuff. And so the alcohol,
drugs, huh?
Yeah. So it's all, they're always there. It's always there. It's just a matter of what's deemed fair at any given time
Lowering health risks long term for these athletes. But you know, when you're at that level, I just feel like, anything goes. Speaking of being at really high levels. Let's move on.
Yeah. Let me just put this in here really quick. Or no, I guess this goes into it. Let's talk about it. High level. If you can
high level extreme performance, you think of what name, Jenny?
High level extreme performance?
Yeah.
This is a test?
No, it's
that's Lael Wilcox.
Yeah.
Lael Wilcox, folks. Lael Wilcox is going to be departing on her second attempt at setting the world record at going around the world, which is she set the women's record two years ago.
She's going for the overall. Now
she's going for the overall, which is wild to think that you would do such a huge task. And only 2 years later, want to attempt it again. And these attempts, she's got to ride like 250 miles a day on average. And so that's 16 hours on the bike, and then she was going to sleep for 6 hours and then have like a little bit of flex time. So, you know, when you're – how many days was that going to be? 70 days?
I think 75 is 250, the record.
250 miles a day, 75 days.
That's extreme.
So that's extreme.
So what do you do? What's the news?
Well, you know, there are marginal gains count quite a bit when they're when you're dealing with that type of mileage every day, and when you're trying to set a record. So even if you could save, you know, a few minutes each day, it adds up over 75 days, right? And so one of the things that Lael is doing is shaving her head because she wants to save time on not washing it and also having it be more aerodynamic. They went to the specialized wind tunnel and actually tested how much drag hair has and saved a few watts by shaving it. So this past weekend, you could see on Lael's Instagram, Lael Wilcox, that she had someone shave her head in San Francisco. And when does she embark on the actual trip?
I'm not sure, but back to the head shaving, she did say in her Instagram that it saves like 10 minutes a day,
right?
Which is significant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't really think about stuff like this. Like, it's
like I was saying, it just adds up.
But it adds up. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10 minutes a day, that was 780 minutes, which is about half a day overall, which is like quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So the current record is held by Mark Beaumont, 78 days, 14 hours, 40 minutes. We will be following up with this throughout our podcast
because she's starting soon. So we'll have some more dedicated stuff coming up about that because, it's going to be, I mean, dot watching is hardly thrilling, but this one could be.
It could be.
You know, I checked in almost every day 2 years ago when Lael was setting the women's record. So be interesting. I mean, is that inspiring? 250 miles a day? I don't know. I don't know if that's inspiring or if I'm just like, wow, I don't, you know, that's. But Lael continues to do this stuff and she continues to love cycling. So I don't know. I guess, you can't really say much about it, really. Whatever is holding your love for the sport, I'm all about. And Lael Wilcox loves bikes, loves moving.
Go, Lael, go.
Go, Lael, go. Moving on, I got a little tech stuff here. This is I don't know how many of you are actually going to care about this, but I love following like the sharp edge of gravel bikes right now because it's an interesting part of the I mean, it is, as far as the big brands go, it's kind of like what is doing best right now. Mountain bikes, the lowest rung on the cycling culture chain, are doing the worst, go figure. But gravel bikes and, of course, e-bikes and high-end road bikes are doing really, really well right now for big brands. So they're putting a lot of R&D and a lot of money and design cash money. Design cash money into the gravel segment right now. And so you're seeing the two biggest brands, arguably, and I don't know if that's arguably or if it can be proven, Specialized and Canyon. They both have famous gravel bikes, Specialized being the Crux and Canyon's being the Grail. You and I both rode Canyon Grails when we were in Mallorca on that Toros de Gravel that Bragan brought us to.
Oh yeah,
with Kyle Kelly, and Florian Wegman, former German champion, pushed Aria up a climb.
He was on my team.
Yeah. It was a cool thing that we did in like 2018. And
Mallorca,
and it was sponsored by Canyon. So we had to ride those original Grails. And this is 2018. This is when gravel tires were 38 millimeters. I think they put us on 35s for these. And it also had that biplane looking handlebar that Bicycle Pubes.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like Bicycle Pubes designed it. And such a stupid idea because it suspended you when you were on the tops. So, you know, not even in the hoods, but on the tops. And then you had no suspension when you were in the hoods or drops. And so it was just a really backwards system and it looked real funny, lasted a year. Anyway, more recent advancements, gravel bikes have moved on to 42 millimeter tires, on to 45 millimeter tires briefly, 48. And now everyone is going whole hog on 55s. Luckily, little ad break, Ultra Dynamica. Yeah, we've got tires that size, folks. We got a brand new 700x53 Brute. Okay, it is a fast roller. You know, we also have a 700x55 millimeter Mars. Okay. Ooh. Yeah, that one's a little bit grippier. So I oftentimes like to run the Mars in the front, and I like to run that Brute in the rear. It gives me some braking traction up the front and gives me some fast rolling in the rear, because, you know, most of your rolling resistance comes from the rear. So, you know, try them out. These things, you can mix them and match them. But man, I tell you, I would really only try Ultra Dynamico, because I'm telling you right now, folks, best tire company I've ever known about or been a part of.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So both Specialized and Canyon in this gravel event in Scotland teased their new bikes, the new Crux and the new Grail. Presumably, we don't know if they're going to like call these things something entirely different altogether, because these bikes, unlike their predecessors.
Yeah.
Predecessors mm-hmm. have very aerodynamic stylings,
meaning like
dropped seat stays, which is a huge drop. Seat stays are a farce, folks. It's just a little, they say it improves compliance, but that's a triangle back there. There's no compliance in a triangle. You can't do it.
Okay.
And so they dropped the seat stays. That's more, it is more aerodynamic, perhaps. A few watts saved there. They internally routed all the cables. That was something new for the Crux. The Grail already had that. So, you know, it looks like they're aero road bikes just with big tires. I mean, drop bars with big tires has kind of been my thing all along. Mm-hmm. One of the things, it's a profile that just always looks cool. And these are pushing what cool can look like. Not quite sure how I feel about it. I really loved the old Crux. Not that I ever had one or anything. I just loved the classic lines of it, the round tubes, the non-dropped seat stays, the externally routed cables. You know, you can move the stem up and down without having to bring your bike to a bike shop and wait for them to painstakingly do that for 2 hours. So, you know, but yeah, they are coming. And I'm sure that next week for Unbound, they're going to release these bikes in earnest. So these are kind of just the lead ups. Our friend of the pod, Taylor Finney, husband of Kashia Niyodama Finney, is racing the new BMC. Don't remember the name, but BMC also has a bike just like this.
Cool.
And he will be riding our new Brute 700x53 Robusto in the race. So we are going to have a tire in the pro field. So Taylor has been a friend since he really got out of pro road racing. And we talked about his aspirations for the Olympic track racing, I believe, on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he will be on our tires for Unbound, which is very exciting for us. Excited to see what, you know, these new releases from Canyon and Specialized.
Day.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
his good voice. Too. He should be on the podcast.
We're going to have him on the pod. Don't you worry. We're going to have him on the pod.
He talks so calm and really cool.
He's special
just
guy.
Just lulls you to sleep.
Oh, well, he energizes me and lulls me to sleep at the same time. It's like a lucid dream. This is just turning into just the news show, because I haven't even gotten into the Paragon got purchased, folks.
Oh gosh, P got peed.
So if anybody was P got peed.
Paragon got purchased.
Yeah, no. Yeah, Victor Campenarts did not pee on Paragon. but we do have. Oh my gosh. We've got, for any of you, this is kind of like the most alt bike news of all this, because Paragon Machine Works made all these parts for the custom frame building market here in the U.S. and abroad. And they shut down, if you didn't hear, a month or two ago, and it was a big deal. Of course, our own frame building business, we do about 150 bikes a year that we build here in Connecticut and Vermont. And we use a lot of parts from Paragon. So it was kind of a big deal for not only us, but a lot of other people. Where are we going to get our parts for, you know, our dropouts, our like chainstay bridges, our bottom bracket shells, and so forth? Where are we going to get these things now? Well, as it turns out for us, since we do rim brake stuff, that stuff was already pretty much discontinued. So we were having to get this stuff custom made and place other places anywhere. But Paragon was doing a lot of custom stuff for us, like the dropouts for the current Alumax 2. Those were made by Paragon, but they had to be a custom design, and they did them for us. And they finished after they had, I mean, I remember when they shut down, I was like, well, they still owe us a lot of, you know, 100 plus or 200, 300, whatever dropouts. So they did finally get them to us. But in a twist of, there's been a lot of different companies that were going to pick up the slack. And it's kind of, you know, it's, it, they said that, that Paragon wasn't a viable business with how the Calvin Norstad,
okay,
took over the business from his dad. This company had been around for 43 years. So he just took it over. The younger son took it over in 2024. And, you know, it's tough times. 2024, tough times for the bike industry. We're still in it, you know. And and so they said that demand for a lot of their stuff just tanked. And so they just weren't able, and their prices were honestly already pretty high. And then even for ordering like 300, 400 parts that we would do, there wasn't much of a price break.
Operating out of Richmond, California, which is
in the Bay Area. So they had to pay, you know, it's most of our, I would assume all of our even bike industry friends, you know, they're all getting a living wage. That's why stuff costs a lot in the US, because it's expensive to live here, especially expensive to live in the Bay. So if you're a bike brand operating out of the Bay, you're paying your employees a living wage or more. You're paying for their health insurance. It's
well, we don't really know the.
Well, I do know that all that. Well, that's what they said. That's what
that's what they said. Okay, it's, I mean,
so
most companies
tough,
seem to claim that.
Yeah, tough to do that, as we found with our own factory.
Well, that was different.
It's different, but still, it's not easy.
We could have done it, but mistakes were made by me. Big failure lessons on that. Anyway, Paragon has been bought out.
So
by
they've
a
been bought out by
Portland,
in Portland, Oregon, of course.
So the thing that I'm curious about is how they're going to transport all of that heavy machinery.
Well, there's no machine. They didn't buy any of the machinery. They just bought the intellectual property.
Say what?
So they purchased Paragon SKUs and like the designs of each part and everything.
Oh,
and so first hand bike frame supply.
Okay.
Bought the intellectual property for Paragon. They're also the North America Reynolds tube importer.
Okay.
And also in the middle of building out a frame building school in Portland, which is a good place for it, because United Bicycle Institute, UBI, closed down. That was the place to learn frame building. I think it was in Ashland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And that closed down in 2023, I believe. So
that's right. Monique did that class when we were in Tucson.
That's right.
Remember?
That's right. And that was I remember when I was in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I was in college in Durango, Colorado. I was like, what am I doing here? I should be at UBI learning how to build bike frames.
Cute.
And I was always on that website being like,
That could be me. That could be Jenny.
Yeah, that could be me. I could be making bikes. Aww. And I think I did it right, though, folks, because I am not precision oriented. So I'm better at doing the designing and the advertising. Let someone else handle the hands-on part. But so first-hand bike frame supply taking on a lot right now. So we're going to kind of see how that goes. They're going to have to axe a lot of the current SKUs, because I guess there is 12,000 or 1,200, one or the other. They're both high numbers.
Okay.
different SKUs. Cause there's all sorts of, you think about like dropouts, for instance.
Yeah.
There's not only like us who use the classic, you know, quick release dropouts. There's not many people that do that anymore. We use quick release dropouts because we use rim brakes, but there are all these different, like UDH is the universal derailleur hanger that you need for all the new SRAM stuff. That's a different dropout. You have sliding dropouts for single speeds. You have 12 millimeter through axles. You have 15 millimeter through axles and so forth. There's so many different, you have all the different disc tabs, the ISO and yeah, whatever, ISO, SLI, COI, SOB. I'm just making up things now, folks, okay?
SOB.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. son of a bitch, disc tabs. So there's a lot of different SKUs out there. So they're going to shrink that down a little bit. In the meantime, Thompson Bike Components, you may know them from their stems and seat posts, and that's most famously. But they're a machine shop in the East Coast, and they do a lot of aerospace and like automotive stuff. So they've got like a 65,000 square foot shop, machine shop, I think in Tennessee. Wow. And so they're able, that's lower, much lower living wage in Tennessee than you have in Richmond. See, they've got a good business in many ways. So, you know, and they're also cycling enthusiasts.
It's just cost of living.
Cost of living is a lot lower. Sorry, living wage, cost of living. And so, you know, they may be producing some parts too.
We love a living wage. Don't put living wage as like the thing, because it's greed from the top.
It's the greed from the top. Yeah. But greed from the top, but not greed from the top of the bike industry. Remember, we're not mad at the bike industry, folks.
We were last week.
We were mad at being mad at the bike industry
week. You were, yeah.
I am. You know, these are small potatoes here.
Very small.
So, I don't know. It's kind of a developing story. We'll see how it goes. And, you know, it affects us in a way because we need our derailleur hangers and dropouts made. But we could get those machined locally also, since they were our own design anyway. So, whatever. Also, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we use that Frank the Welder has to just machine himself in-house because you just can't get this stuff anymore.
Mm.
Okay, well, I think that pretty much wraps it up for news here. That was a long news, as we're already at 48 minutes on this podcast.
Uh-huh.
Well, what are we going to get to next year, sweetie?
Real life report backs. So we were already talking about Unbound a little bit with Taylor riding on the brute. So let's go into story time, real life report back
like
from 2020. Let's time travel. Get in, Marty.
So what happened in 2020?
So in 2020, the race that's currently called Unbound was called a different name, which was pretty racist and a racial slur to Kaw Nation. Kanza is a name that Kaw Nation calls themselves. So there was a call out to change the name from their inception. I think they started, when did Unbound start? Like,
oh man, it was like a long time. It was a long time ago.
So it was called this racial slur name for like at least 5 years, right?
I think 10 years.
Like, yeah, a really long time. It was started by that guy who is from there, so he should know. There are primary sources that had that racial slur being used against Kaw Nation since like the 1800s or something.
And let me set the stage here too. So at 2020, this gravel event was already the largest gravel event in the world.
Right.
On top of that, it being the bike boom, a lot of people were getting introduced to gravel. And so
the spirit of gravel was still there.
The spirit of gravel was still
alive. Anyway. And I would say that this event kind of birthed the spirit of gravel.
Right.
And it was called this racial slur. So there was a lot of pushback from the community there, and they just couldn't, like, so many petitions signed, a lot of community dialogue, a lot of conversations, a lot of news outlets.
The Native community.
From the Native community. But, you know, like the Native community as a whole isn't just like one voice. There's lots of differing opinions, political ideations, whatever, within the group. But there was a group of concerned members of Kaw Nation who absolutely wanted this name changed. They had memories of when they were called, and their parents themselves were called this racial slur going into town. So they absolutely did not want this advertised once a year when the whole town of Emporia becomes pretty much this race.
It's wild. If you ever attend this race, I have a few times, it's wild. Yeah. Like it's the entire town's identity.
For that long weekend.
It's their biggest moneymaker of the entire year. So yeah, the entire town is built around it.
Yeah. It's coming up this weekend. It's from May 28th to the 31st. So I thought that it'd be a nice time for this story because it's not really talked about. It was covered a little bit in media, in cycling media. I think Outside picked it up in 2020 because, you know, racial awakening was a thing. And in 2020, which we swiftly forgot, but It was a time to really come to terms with this stuff. And I was happy to kind of jump in on this campaign towards the end in 2020 with my friend from Ciclista Zine, who was being really good about covering this from like grassroots journalist kind of a perspective. And we got connected with members of Caught Nation who were saying like hell no to this name and keeping the pressure on. Like there was so much organizing, but
because they had been just bought by Lifetime also. Exactly. At this point, I think in 2020 was going to be the first Lifetime edition. So Lifetime owns the gyms and the sporting equipment,
right?
And so they had this race had been bought out. The Spirit of Gravel had been bought.
Yeah. And then that meant that there is now a new target for decision-making changes. Being an activist myself, I know for like having trained people on how to run campaigns, you have like a target who is the decision maker and you go after that person. And then there's secondary and tertiary targets. But because this was happening at a time when Lifetime was taking over, it was a key moment for decisions to be made because now this was going to be a new bill. Anyway, there was a campaign relaunched with, there was a new petition. We made a website happen that was called Change the Name, Name the Change. And the founder of the race also posted something racist on Facebook around this time that added fuel to the fire.
He had misjudged. I think he thought there was another police shooting that he got confused with another police shooting.
Yeah.
And then he not only misnamed the person who got shot, but he posted a video from a different angle saying, look, you could see that it was his fault entirely. And it was one of those hot button issues that he was like really digging his heels in. It made me sick.
Yeah. Ron was really upset about it.
So I guess this is tell him why you're mad. This is tell him why we were mad.
Yeah. This is tell us why you were mad six years ago.
It's so infuriating to have your sport kind of, you know, just presented in this way so ignorantly. And to in 2020, especially, I felt like our sport was growing at such a you know, it was reaching so many people that hadn't been on bikes in so long. And this was how we were reintroducing ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't get mad often, but I was very, very mad at this. And I was so thrilled that you were taking this on. Anyway,
I was jumping onto work that people had already been doing for a really long time.
Right.
And I also remember feeling incredible anger at this too.
It was unbelievable. And that there are still people digging in and supporting this guy.
Yeah. Because before this guy did that Facebook post, that racist Facebook post, there was pushback saying like, well, the Caught Nation's like municipal like lead said it's fine to use that name. So then there was all of this stirring and then, you know, the racist organizer showed himself to be who he is. And then the conversation changed again. So that's my long-winded story about what happened in 2020 with Caught Nation versus Unbound. They did end up changing the name, of course.
To Unbound
and not the old racist name.
Gravel has no boundaries anyway.
that's the thing, I guess. And I was looking through some old books the other day and I found this note that I got from one of the women that I was organizing with.
Before we get into this, I mean, you're downplaying. It was a resounding success.
It was a resounding
success. The name got changed.
It's a really big deal. Biggest gravel races in the world.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest deals in cycling.
Caught Nation won. Or, you know, the people who...
And they didn't want it named. Say that they wanted it to okay with the name prior to this, that was debunked.
No one had permission to call themselves that racist name.
It was all hearsay. You know, so it's anyway.
So
it was a success.
It was a resounding success because when you try to push back against money, power, and ego, it usually doesn't go well for people who don't have much who are pushing back. So it felt really important and uplifting to win that. But the thing I remember from organizing that was how welcoming and like expansive and beautiful the vision that folks who are pushing for this name change were. Like one of the elders on the phone was like, we would love to, you know, bless the writers, you know, before, like if there was like respectful engagement with the community, like how beautiful that event actually could be. Like I'm tearing up just thinking about it because these elders are like, we could really incorporate culture and character into this race that holds the land, and we could tell stories of the land that like these riders who are going through suffering can connect to. Maybe like it was a gorgeous pluralist like world that I dream about that these elders were imagining, and I just, you know, I weep at that because power, ego, and money gets in the way of our own experiences and beauty so much. And it doesn't have to be like that. And the flip side of the tears is anger, right? But anyway, I wanted to read this note that I found out of nowhere. It's dated August 25th, 2020.
Because they held the race in 2020.
Because of COVID.
It was perfect time anyways.
So this was a good time for the new board, for the new decision makers to make these decisions. And they did the right thing because Mid-South had changed their name without any fuss whatsoever.
Bobby and Crystal were like,
we didn't know. Sure, we'll change it. It could be as easy as that. And then they also embraced, Mid-South embraced Native storytelling. They embraced the land. And, you know, and that event is so beautiful because you go in that direction of plurality, of respect, of like appreciating the land that you're on that's holding you as you go through really hard things, like as mother. Anyway, so there's different ways to do it. Unbound did not do it that way, but the people still won. And
the
note that I got was from this woman. I won't name the woman because I don't have permission to share her name, but I hope it's okay to share
from the Kansas Heritage Society.
She says, Nam, that was my name at the time. As you know, I cannot speak for Kaw Nation, but I can speak from my heart as a Kansas citizen. And there are many others that feel like I do. You have accomplished an amazing thing for our people. I know it takes courage and perseverance to stand up for a small tribe against a major corporation. Truly a David and Goliath story. Wow. I hope you will wrap this towel. Oh, it was like a really cute towel she sent me. Around you after showering from a bike ride and feel a real Kaw hug. We are forever grateful. And I keep this note with me just to remind ourselves that it's possible to make changes if you just keep pushing, if you keep thinking in visualizing how things could be, which is really beautiful, and that we are only limited by power as long as we let it.
I am so damn proud of you for that, sweetie. That's like one of the...
Again, it's not me.
I know, but...
I
know you, and that was one of my proudest moments of you or for you. I don't know what that means, but I was very very inspired by that.
I was very angry. was fueled by
So now it's now it still is the largest gravel event in the world, and it is called Unbound, and it's a 200-mile gravel race through the Flint Hills of Kansas, and it's happening this weekend.
Yeah.
So that kind of got into why we were mad, and it kind of, and I know I am in the beginning of the show, I teased that I had something really good while I was mad at. Not that that wasn't good. That wasn't what I was thinking of though. And I can't really follow up that. That was really good. So we'll have to get into why I'm mad next week.
Okay.
So, well, I guess it's about time to wrap it up, isn't it?
Well, this week you had You had a hand, you had a crash on your bike.
I mean, if you want to get into the real life report back quickly, I had a crash while my third crash, and like, I don't crash much because I'm very careful because I want to be riding my bike well into my hundreds. And so I try and, you know, I try and ride rigid bikes that don't get me going too fast, too quickly down a trail, or, you know, I just try to show off that I'm riding something technical while rigid, and that's enough to impress most people. Well, anyway, this seems like I've just been crashing more and more lately, though. So over, I think on Tuesday, I was, you know, there's a lot of downed trees this time of year. It's stick season here in New England.
Stick season.
And I was just trying to get through, ram through this downed tree. Had a bunch of branches across the trail. And I oftentimes do this and come out completely unscathed. But this time, pieces of the tree wedged in between my fork crown and front wheel and just tossed me like a...
Like a tossed potato.
Tossed me like a salad. And all over, and just yard sailed me all over the trail. I landed like first on my palm on the one root that was sticking up. And so it looked like I had like a baseball in my hand when I didn't. It just swelled up that much. And I had to come back here and call Aria and be like, come home. I can't get my glove off. But you took care of me nicely. You went down to the swim hole. It was a hot day, and you kind of sponge bathed me off.
Yeah.
But I've been recovering ever since. So the very next day I was out on my recumbent. I kind of got down on myself because I was like, oh, I'm riding so well right now. This is the beginning of the season. I've got all these big ride plans. And that night I remembered I had my recumbent.
Yeah.
Which is an adaptive bike for me. I get to ride it whenever I'm injured. And it's got me through a lot already in life. And so I dusted that bad boy off and did a long ride on the recumbent the next day. And it was a beautiful hot day. And I got to tan my front side, which was really nice. So like my chest got all nice and tan because that's the way you ride a recumbent. You know, you're in full relaxation mode. Yeah. And I got to say,
folks, lazy boy chair.
It was on hilly terrain. The recumbent often struggles. And this recumbent even has like shitty plastic pedals. Like it's not, you know, this wasn't set up for performance, but I was still able to average, you know, 14 and a half miles an hour on a 45 mile ride with, you know, roughly 3,000 feet of climbing. So the recumbent is a fast bike, you know, but my ass was so sweaty. So that's the downside. Like, you know, didn't have any, you know, your undercarriage isn't sweaty, but
you
think
also a really hot day.
But I don't even want to. I don't want to think about what's living on that seat right now.
You don't have to.
I don't have to because I could ride a regular bike again.
Right.
That's for next time.
Adaptive bikes for the win.
Everyone needs a recumbent. And I got this one for $200 at Bikus a few years ago.
Yeah.
And it's got Durace. It's got Durace, folks.
Durace.
It's got plastic pedals, but it's got Durace. So that's my real life report back. I'm back. I'm actually, it's really crappy out, as we said earlier in the episode right now. But right after this, I've got a nice bike ride planned with a few friends. We're going to go ATBing in the mud, not on a recumbent, but on an upright bike. It's not quite ready to lean on my controls just yet, you know, drop bar style.
Yeah, but your hand's still pretty bruised.
But no excuse to stop. I mean, you know, get on that bike, get on that recumbent, or just do a walk or a hike, or just keep moving that body, folks. All right. Okay. So let's close it out.
Why are you looking at me in the eyes?
Yeah, because we're going to talk about that on the next episode. So you're getting out of it this time, but Nams has not ridden a bike in. Can't remember.
Yeah,
it's been a long time.
I think it was Jambi's event in Australia. March.
And you weren't riding much before that either. So we've got to get you back on the saddle. We're going to have our listeners hold you accountable.
Yeah.
So
I do need that. I need public accountability.
Public shaming.
No, I don't need public shaming. Thank you very much. I won't do things for myself, but if there's someone else who's counting on me, I mean, I know listeners are not counting on me, but, you know, it's like a mind trick. Then I'll actually do it.
Yeah, mind tricks.
Yeah, others before self.
So start holding her accountable, everyone.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that on the next episode. Well, let's get quickly into our wrap-up podcast we love this week.
I love your sound effect.
Well, you were basically going to talk about the enhanced games, because that was a podcast that I had listened to that kind of tied into my recommendation last week for the performance enhancing with weed.
Yeah.
This one, there was also a Freakonomics about the enhanced games. So check that out also.
Mm-hmm. It was a hot week for NPR because we have this like AM FM radio in the kitchen. So I've been listening to that. And there was a story about this person named Mary Kane, who has written a memoir called This Is Not About Running. And she just talked about her journey as like a world-class runner at 16, just like an incredibly gifted runner, and how, you know, the sports industrial complex kind of preys on these young athletes and puts them through a cycle of I guess like development that isn't great. She was particularly calling out the Nike Oregon Project, which doesn't exist anymore because the coach, something Salazar, was like pretty abusive. Mm. So I just found it interesting because it is about sport and it is about how we keep the joy of sport alive and how we kill sports for young people who are like unnaturally gifted, and for even those of us who are not, like the pressures that we put on ourselves, the mental notes that we tell ourselves.
Tie that into
the Jiminy Cricket kind of voice in our head. Saying, oh, if you were just skinnier, you could go faster, even though you're
Jiminy,
not like
Jiminy Cricket is always telling me that.
Jiminy Crickets.
You know, that ties Cricket into cycling with the, I can't remember his name, the guy on Uno X, Johannes. You know, anyway, it was a guy who's, looks full grown now, but he Hansen. Was Johansson.
Yeah.
Abrahansson. Johan Abrahansson, something. Oh, yeah. I think that's it.
Yeah.
He was a racer who's started to do well now, but he was, you know, a very gifted rider growing up. And because his coaches having him on all these diets and training regimens delayed his puberty inadvertently. And so he was well into his 20s and hadn't gone through puberty yet. Mm. And once he, you know, got everything right with his body, he gained a bunch of weight, but it was good weight, and he went through puberty. And now he's actually becoming a successful racer. But it's wild what we do. And with sport happening, professional sports happening younger and younger for people, you know, people are eschewing the high school and college trajectory and just signing with professional teams or
right
leagues
away,
like
yeah.
right away.
Yeah.
And so we are, you know, there's a tremendous amount of stress on mentally and physically on these young athletes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think of Femme Van Empel.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Like the cyclocross incredibly racer. Gifted
world
or
champion.
Talented world champion.
A current world champion. Or
twice over
races past year,
but 23 years old at the top of her game, and she had to step away from it, and I mm-hmm. applaud her for prioritizing her mental health, because she was like, I don't know who I am as a human being,
right,
like without racing. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem for me, and like to really step away at the peak of her performance, I think says a lot about her. And
these cyclists, these athletes in general are incredible. Performing at such high levels right now that there are so many of them doing the same things that everyone's looking for like a little, you know, any sort of performance boost you can get. You notice that no one on the podiums drinks the beers or the podium or the champagnes.
Do.
I want to say that.
At Amstel Gold, all the girls all on the podium drank it. And
well, they probably lost the next day because of it.
Actually, the person who was third of the boys drank it, but Remco didn't.
Yeah. So, you know, there are things where there's... You know, everything is come. You know, everything can
everything
hurt your
matters.
Performance.
Everything
matters.
Counts.
So you know,
every breath you take,
you don't really get to enjoy your
every move you make.
Your childhood, yes.
Jiminy Cricket,
Jiminy
is,
Cricket
watching
is watching
you.
All right. Well, Jiminy
beautiful
Cricket.
Beautiful rainy morning with
beautiful
you, sweetheart.
Beautiful rainy morning here. I don't know if that's necessarily beautiful. We're going to have a nice warm week. Everything's going to green up even more than it is already, which is hard to believe because it is full technicolor here right now.
Yeah.
Full
it's that
saturation.
Early summer, like light green.
Highlighter green.
I call it highlighter green. And then, like, the leaves are still somewhat transparent. Like, you can kind of see through them.
A lot of flowers.
But later on, it's just going to be
a
deep, dark, emerald green everywhere.
Beautiful. I am psyched to get out on the bike every day this week.
Super psyched. It's going to be a beautiful week.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got a lot to talk about next week. I hope you'll join us. Thank you for joining us on this one. And, folks, that's all from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Happy first month.
I'm Ronnie Romance.
I'm Aria Proudfoot.
Again? We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye. Love you.